Hello, listeners. This podcast is hosted by International Idea. In the next minutes, we will help you make sense of what's happening today in democracy worldwide.
Hello and welcome to Peer to Peer. My name is Erik Asplund.
And my name is David Tauris.
And we will be your hosts today for this International Idea podcast focusing on elections. In this series, we will share knowledge, experience, and good practice through our conversations with practitioners.
This first part of our series will focus on training, education, and research in electoral administration. Each episode will include a guest who will provide insights on how the Election Commission in their country prepares frontline workers for election day operations, and how it provides voters and other stakeholders with the information that they need to make the election a success.
In this episode, the third in our series, we are talking to Peter Stanion, Chief Executive of the Association of Election Administrators, about the role his organization plays in training and educating electoral officers in the United Kingdom. Peter is himself an electoral trainer, and he brings to our conversation over 30 years of experience of involvement in UK electoral administration, including preparing election administrators and poll workers for the UK's recent local elections in May. Welcome, Peter. We are delighted to have you with us.
Hi. Hello. Hello, everybody.
Indeed. I think the training and education that the association is carrying out in the UK will be of particular interest to our listeners for a couple of reasons. Firstly, as we will explore later, the nature of the association and the important role that it has forged for itself is in many ways unusual. Secondly, the UK system of electoral administration is the first decentralised system that our podcast has examined. And it is here that I'd like to begin our conversation, Peter. Could you briefly take us through the UK's election administration structures, beginning at the top and finishing at the polling station level?
Thanks, Dave. I like the way you used the word briefly there. It's one of the most complicated systems now that I've seen for a long time. Basically, the simple way of describing it is you've got the lawmakers at the top. You've got the governments, the UK Parliament. You've also got the devolved legislatures in Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland that also make election law in for certain elections in their areas. So that's where the law's made. And then effectively, when we'll talk later on about, I'm sure, about the independent role of returning officers, they are then responsible for running the election as per the law that's been written by the relevant bodies. We do have an electoral commission. The electoral commission is basically an advisory commission. They do have a statutory responsibility to run national referendums, and there have been two since the commission was formed back in 2000. But other than that, it's simply an advisory body to provide guidance, support, and to run the political party finance structures that go around that as well. But then effectively, the elections themselves and the electoral registration process is run by the local authorities across the United Kingdom. Slightly different in Scotland, where there is a slightly more complicated system. But effectively, there's in the region about 370 local authorities. Each of them appoint a returning officer, a registration officer, and then they run the actual elections themselves with full independence from their local authorities themselves. They appoint the staff, they undertake the process, they make they ensure that it's run according to the law itself, but they themselves are then responsible to the law, personally responsible to ensure they've delivered it. So you're having a very top with the big structures. There's no commission that runs it in the same way as in other countries. It's run by independent local returning officers, very much at the local level, who then appoint all the staff, etc., from there.
You summarised that wonderfully succinctly, Peter. Thank you. So sort of from that, we can sort of say that the returning officers and the electoral registration officers are the key actors in electoral administration in the UK. Are those two positions held by the same person, or are they usually different people?
Generally speaking, across the majority of the UK, it will generally be the same person. They are independently appointed posts. You appoint a returning officer and you appoint a registration officer, but they're so intrinsically linked together. Certainly in England and Wales, the majority, I wouldn't say every single one, but 99.9% would be the same person. Slightly different in Scotland, because in Scotland, they have valuation joint boards, which are basically they deal with the assessment of rates and things. They've combined together, so the registration officers are slightly different to the returning officers, but the same roles are being undertaken to ensure the responsibilities in law are being delivered. But generally, yes, they are the same individuals.
And they are appointed from the local authority, is that correct? They are.
Yeah, local authorities have a duty to appoint an officer of the council as a registration officer and as a returning officer, but then their roles, apart from providing resources to them, their role then stops. It's almost like a curtain comes down between their role as a local authority employee and then their role as the independent role of returning officer and registration officer. So the independence of the process is maintained.
And Peter, who has responsibility for training the returning officers and the electoral registration officers?
In terms of them themselves, there is no formal training structure in place. They're right. Simply appointed to and then are responsible to what the legislation requires them to do and the codes of practice and things that come around that. They themselves then have the responsibility of ensuring those who deliver the actual duties on their behalf are trained to their satisfaction, brutally, to keep them out of court. That's what it boils down to. A poll worker in a remote polling station could be the one that brings an election into disrepute. That action will be the one that puts a returning officer or registration officer before a judge to explain what went awry in that election. So again, it filters down. There's no formal qualification for registration. It can be any officer of the council. They just have a responsibility to run it according to law. A sensible returning officer, registration officer will get training. But there are many that will not because they've got so many other duties on their plates.
So, right, just to very, very briefly summarise then, they have these obligations under law and they have sort of responsibilities. They are responsible for ensuring that their poll workers are adequately trained. There are sort of two sets of sort of poll workers. Am I right in saying so? You have within a sort of polling station, there's presiding officer, is that right? And then the polling clerks.
Yeah, the law requires there be a presiding officer appointed for each polling station, and they have the duty to run it in the actual station. The poll clerk, as many as required, to assist with the delivery of the service to the electors coming through the door.
Really interesting. Thank you, Peter. And is the and how is this sort of election administration sort of funded? Is it also decentralised to the local authorities?
The body to whom is being elected is the one who's responsible for funding that election. So on the election side, for example, a UK parliamentary general election, it will fall to the central exchequer to provide the resources to run that election. For a local authority election, it will be down to the local authority to fund their own election on that side. The only slight quirk on it is for an electoral registration that is funded through local authorities independently of the actual election itself. But effectively, the body being elected to is the one that has to fund that particular election.
And do those funds usually include sums for election training?
Yes. I mean, there is it's recognised that the staff on duty, whether it be in the stations, at the counts, on postal voting, etc., need to be trained. So there's an element of that within the funding agreements, but it's left to the returning officers to determine what they think is the appropriate level of training for them to roll out.
So, Peter, I was thinking maybe a good follow-up question would be, you know, the roles of the presiding officer. Now, you said that he or she may have other duties. What kind of duties are we talking about here? And is this person doing other types of work at the same time as he or she is working as a presiding officer?
You mean the returning officer rather than presiding officer? We're talking about the heads, the person in charge. That's absolutely
right. Yes, of course.
That's absolutely the fine. Officer. I mean, I think the element to that is that, generally speaking, the local authority will appoint a senior officer of the council. That could be the chief executive officer of the local authority. So they also have a responsibility to deliver the services strategically of that local authority, whatever type of authority that might well be, social services, education, planning, all the other bits and pieces local authorities do, as well as running independently the electoral process at the same time. I've often spoken to overseas observers and not understanding how the system works in the UK, or the way the Electoral Commission works in the UK, not being the deliverer of elections, and how can these individuals maintain their independence? Well, it is a statutory independence. So you will have an individual, for example, working with the elected politicians on delivering their commitments, their manifesto commitments, at the same time as having to run independently an election that could affect those very same politicians. So it's a strange setup. It's a historical setup. It's been there since the mid-1600s and hasn't changed fundamentally as a result of that. It comes down to ensuring that returning officers bring down what I call the glass ceiling, to say that on one hand you're dealing with this because you are personally responsible for the delivery of a safe election, but they will still be delivering their 9-to-5 job on the other side of the fence in terms of the actual basic processes a local authority will have to deliver. So whether that's unique or not, I don't know, but it's certainly a challenge for those individuals in those posts as they go through an electoral process.
Now that we have a good picture of how elections are administrated in the UK, I'd like to move on to the important and I think unusual role that the AEA plays. Peter, in one sentence, could you describe the association for us?
Yeah, sure. It was set up in 1988, so it's been going for over 30 years now. I've been pondering this one. The best way I can describe it is that the association is the independent professional body that supports election professionals in the delivery of their duties, sharing good practice and encouraging innovation. Effectively, with my second sentence, I'm sorry, Eric, is basically the group of like-minded individuals who came together back in 1988 before the formation of the Electoral Commission to actually work out how to successfully deliver elections and to share good practice in that way. So that's what we're all about.
Great. So if you'd, I have one follow-up question there. Is it a membership-based organization? And in that case, how many members do you actually have?
Yeah, it is membership-based. It's primarily aimed at those who actually deliver the elections, so not directly at returning officers and registration officers because they have that role, but those who actually do the work to deliver the election in the offices, you know, pushing the paper, for want of a better way, punching the keys. We have just over 2,000 members at the moment. We're represented at this stage in every single local authority in the UK. And effectively, yes, they each pay a nominal fee each year to be a member, and they all then are equal party in what we actually then deliver.
And how is the association structured, would you say?
So basically, the way that the association, we have a professional side of which I am, you know, an employee of, that provides the services when we work closely with government, with providing the training, with working on consultancy and things like that. We have 11 branches around the UK. We've subdivided into what were the old European parliamentary electoral regions, basically, not quite as clear cut, but basically. And they each have their own, the branch structure, they're all autonomous of each other. They then act as the engagement for people within their areas to talk to each other. We also have then the national structure where we all come together as a board, as a conference every year, so that we can actually then share them nationally, all the bits in that respect. So professional providing the services, but it's also very much member-led in terms of the needs of members in terms of what they require to assist them to run the electoral process.
Thanks. You said that it was membership-based, so there is some kind of fee involved there. Would also be interesting to know how the association is also funded in addition to that. For example, do you receive any state funding?
No, we've took a decision very early on. In fact, we reinforced that very recently. We do not wish to receive direct state funding because of the simple answer. We want to remain independent of the process, because we will also be, we deem ourselves to be the critical friend of governments. We're not there to determine what the policy will be. Very good examples at the moment, voter ID being introduced, changes to overseas electors. That is for the governments of the day to determine in terms of policy. We are here to be the practical voice about how can that be delivered without a creaking system falling over as a result of that. But primarily, our funding comes from things such as providing direct training to members, providing consultancy services where local authorities are unable to get staff in place. We've had our qualification, which is a self-funding thing. Professional services, where we deliver support, health checks to returning officers, registration officers, and the like. And actually, quite a small element of it is the subscriptions. It's £50 a year. It's, you know, for what the service is provided, it's incredible value for money compared to what is provided by others. We have a conference, things like that. So you would not say it's not state funding, because it will come through local authorities to procure the services that we have, but we have no direct state funding at all because of that very clear view that we do not want to be influenced in that way, because we want to remain, if we're unhappy about something, we want to be in that position to be able to say so.
Peter, before we begin to talk about the training and education services that you've just alluded to, that the association provides, I think it would be helpful to get an idea of the landscape of election training in the UK. You mentioned earlier that actually the legislation sort of places these obligations on the sort of returning officers, but, you know, doesn't necessarily provide the infrastructure there for them to be sort of trained themselves. Is the association the only large-scale sort of provider of election officer training in the country?
We're the principal one. Yeah. There are other organisations similar to ourselves. SOLIS, so this is the Society of Local Authority Chief Executives, delivers training to returning officers and registration officers. They have that arm, but are not actively in the market as much as the AEA itself is. You also have the other commercial supplying, particularly around things such as polling station training, where the online video type training will be available to procure from other suppliers other than the AEA as well. So, but generally speaking, we're recognised as being the, I wouldn't say the only training provider, but everyone comes to the AEA for that level of training, because it's the professionals providing the support to the professionals in that way. That's probably the best selling point that we have.
Yeah. And where a local authority chooses not to engage yourself or another training provider, do they then, generally speaking, provide the training to their poll workers themselves?
Yeah, that's right. The Electoral Commission, although they don't get directly involved, generally speaking, in delivering training, there'll be the odd seminar, there'll be the odd briefing that they will provide. They do provide a suite of materials to support returning officers, PowerPoints, handbooks. The Electoral Commission's polling station handbook is the go-to document for those sorts of things, and we link our training to those sorts of documents. But they are available to assist. The vast majority of local authorities, returning officers, will deliver their own training. I've stood in front of many occasions in front of the staff, partly because you've got that scare factor of, I want to make sure I've looked them in the eyes and they've listened to what I've said, because they could be the one that ends up with me having to talk to a judge as to why it all went wrong. And there's lots of stories to tell around that. But that's the principal way of doing the training. It's adapted as a result of the COVID situation we've been through recently. But generally speaking, it's the returning officer or the registration officer, if they do electoral registration training, to deliver the training from either themselves, procure it in, do a bit of a mix and match. It's their judgment call to actually how they deliver that one. But it's about making sure the key messages they want to get through are delivered on the day.
Yeah. Thank you.
Peter, how does the devolved nature of election administration in the UK affect the training programs you deliver to poll workers in different parts of the country?
It's really just a case of the bulk of what's been, what we're often saying in training courses, that the book tells you how to run an election. But the nature of running an election in London or Manchester, the big cities, will be completely different to running it in very rural areas, Cornwall, Northumberland, or places like that. The key element to the way the training is adapted is to take account of local circumstance. The returning officers have a very, very important role. Their teams have an important role in explaining what are the differences. If I was to go in to deliver training in one local authority and deliver the same training next door, it wouldn't work. You have to actually be in a position to sort of work out, you know, basic bits and pieces, like communication, for example. I used to work for a London local authority and I had a mobile phone signal to every single polling station. And yet only 50 miles outside of London, you could find there are polling stations in dead spots as far as the, and then that means how do we cope with the things on the day when you've not. So it's really about local knowledge. The principles, 80, 90% of training will be exactly the same. It's purely those local principles. And also learning from the things that have gone wrong, building on the things that have gone right in those sorts of areas previously, just to make sure that all of the staff involved, one, are listening to what's being said. It's an engaging element in those things. There's an age-old adage, which I'm sure applies around the world, is that a brand new polling worker will listen to every single word and deliver the election perfectly. The person who's been working for 30 years will have switched off within 5 minutes, and they'll be the biggest risk to the election. And that, again, I've got personal experience of that. It's about keeping it engaging, local, relevant for the type of poll that's being run, because the poll in 1 May, for example, will be completely different to the poll the next May, depending on the area. So, sorry, a very long-winded answer there, Eric. Sorry. It comes down to just trying to make it absolutely clear that local circumstance is built into the training provision.
You mentioned earlier that, you know, things can go wrong. Do you have any, like, examples that you could share?
The one I always give, and it's many years ago, was following a change in legislation around the stamping of ballot papers, the authorisation of papers in the polling stations. I received a phone call from an elector on polling day, halfway through the day, to say to me, is it correct that the staff are writing the elector number details on the back of the ballot papers before they hand them to the voter? And I was very polite to this particular lady, and I said to her, thank you, but no, that's not the case, shouldn't be happening. I was far less polite on the telephone to the poll workers when I spoke to them. I will not tell you what I said to them. We went down there. They'd issued in the region of 275 ballot papers by that point in the day in a very politically contentious ward. Technically speaking, every one of those ballot papers should have been rejected because of the fact they were no longer a secret ballot in that way. There is a provision in UK law that allows us to correct procedural errors. We instituted that successfully, but something as simple as, I think that the presiding officer in charge of the station said, but we've always done that. And you think, no, you've just not listened. You've done, and that is why that was one where I came very, very close to, I think, I was having a nervous breakdown on polling day, because how do we can deal with that? None of it's the elector's fault. It's all down to the staff. We got through it. But that's something very low key, very simple. And there'll be lots of examples that every single returning officer could tell you as to where things have gone wrong or could have gone very more seriously wrong than they actually did on polling day.
Thanks, Peter. That's quite an illustrative answer. I was wondering, because you did mention the pandemic earlier, so it would be interesting to have your view on this question. So I was thinking, what impact has COVID-19 had on the delivery of poll worker training, would you say?
The biggest fundamental change was the shift to online training, as simple as that. Again, the traditional system of delivering polling station training was to have everybody in a room on a rolling basis to role play, that type of thing. But because of the pandemic, clearly that wasn't a sensible approach, because you could have taken out a number of staff if one had tested positive, for example, during the training. So the fundamental shift was to online. And then where we came into that, we were new to the market on that this year, but we were able to adapt our training specifically for local authorities to deal with their local issues. Other providers could also do that. But it meant that we were able to get that in with tests, with the validation, et cetera. So that's probably been the biggest shift. It'd be very interesting to see this year, or leading into next year's May elections, next major set of polls, whether people continue to use that online training or bring a blended approach in, because there are positives and negatives. One of the things that I think was a a bit of a negative was the fact that being able to train presiding officers, those in charge of the station, with some of the specific procedures around end of day process and things like that, that you can't really do in online. So I would probably suggest that the biggest change that has been brought in will be either to all online, or there'll be more of a blended approach to training coming through as a result of the limitations on movement.
Yeah, and I was thinking, because we were discussing this before, about online training and the challenges it represents, and especially in ensuring active learning through a kind of a participant interaction. And that is a challenge. And I was wondering, what's your take on that?
I think you have to get that, you say, the validation of it is the message getting through. Like taking the example I gave you of the staff who said, we've always done it this way. Well, that they clearly hadn't. So the challenge for all of the training providers, if it continues to remain on that remote type of delivery, will be that validation. How do you make sure that you get through the quality of learning to the staff? Because you are heavily reliant on those individuals to deliver that. There's also the challenge. There's a regular problem challenge in the UK in terms of getting staff to be employed by to put themselves forward for employment. It's all voluntary. They do get paid, but it's a voluntary aspect. That if you do actually get somebody set a test level at 85%, 90%, 95% to say they've got through these things, what happens when they fail? You've still got a seat in that polling station. Now, that's not to say you want to put somebody in there who's not going to be up to the standard, but there's a real challenge that's going on there because of the limited timescales available ahead of elections to train staff. So it's essential that there's validation in there, but how that is delivered successfully will be the big question mark as we go forwards.
Yeah. Again, I was thinking a little bit about the training that you're delivering and the COVID-19 again. And to what extent has it affected the content of the poll worker training course? Is there any new content on, for example, procedures that have been highlighted by the Election Commission?
The only new content, because the elections in May of this year run exactly the same as the elections happened in May the previous year, the year 2 years before, the last general election going back. They haven't changed. There's no change to procedure because it's very clear government decision, and quite rightly, in my opinion, that a voter walking into a station should have exactly the same experience, except it's being delivered in a pandemic. So the only major change that took place to train delivery were what were the elements of safety in polling stations, the 2 metre distance that was operating in the UK, screens, for example, hand sanitisation. They were the new bits that came in for this particular poll. And as we go forward to the next major polls in May of next year, when local government elections are taking place, it will be down to returning officers how much of that do they want to maintain. We've already had some things sent through, fed through to us, that some are going to maintain the screens because they feel there's a barrier more than both for safety and the health and well-being of the staff themselves. Others will take a different view. So the new bits were there for a one-off and will be continuing by elections taking place now, but there may be elements of it that will maintain in place depending on individual local preferences and circumstances.
Mm. I was thinking also about, you know, kind of the delivery of training. And you mentioned before that, you know, you do have returning officers and providing officers who are actually the ones delivering your training. How many trainers does the association have, and what kind of training do they receive, or are they just naturals, or they?
It's just as simple as that. We have a limited number of trainers, but the vast majority of them are employed by local authorities delivering elections. So they do this as an addition to their day jobs, for want of a better phrase. So when it comes to things like more wider training out of election, we will be expecting, and that's what, again, one of the big advantages that we as an association have is that if somebody who's actually doing the job is training to those who want to do that job or need to learn about that job. So there is personal anecdotes, interest, etc. When it comes to delivering polling station training, we have some retired members. We have some who are no longer directly employed, consultants, for example, who will go to local authorities to deliver for them. Some of the big cities, for example, that can be delivering training to 1,000 individuals. So they'll be there for a week, just literally delivering it face to face. So I think the difference in the training delivery that I think will happen now is the fact that many will begin to go to the online provision, and therefore they almost self-train them in that respect. All the work is done before it gets to them. But that we've already heard that some individuals want to go back to that face-to-face training, whereas some want to stick with the online. So in terms of who the training the individuals get, we have a training education training manager. He writes the majority of the courses. They're all sense-checked before they're out there, and we simply pull in people and say, here is the course, these are the key elements. And every single one of our trainers is accredited in terms of having been through a thorough training program to get them to the standards that we would expect them to be in that engaging way. It's not about just delivery by route. It's about actually bringing people into the provision all the way through. So, yeah, it's small arm, but at the same time, it's quality trainers coming out.
As the linchpins of the UK's sort of decentralised election sort of administration system, the ROs and the EROs seem to be the sort of principal beneficiaries of the association's sort of training course offerings. Could you give us an idea of the types of courses, sort of the variety, I suppose, of courses that the association offers to these election officers?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, the basic thing we say is that we can offer whatever training a return officer wants. There are the off the shelves, but we also do the bespoke courses. Starting at the very top, you see this sort of in the January, February, March of each year, interest from new returning officers and registration officers about what their responsibilities are. We give them a strategic overview, as do Solace, as I say, I mentioned the other training provider for their side of things. So you've got that very strategic training. You've also got the more specific training around postal vote handling, about count management, about actually what makes a good training course to deliver to your poll workers, for example. So we've got more wider things such as employment responsibilities, because a returning officer employs the staff. They've got to make sure they're dealing with all general employment law. So effectively, there are bite-sized elements of the whole process is dealing with it in a great deal of detail, as well as strategic. We also offer, for new starters to the profession, our foundation course, which basically takes place over a full day period, either by residential or on a modular type basis, which takes somebody coming into the profession from the start to the end of the whole of the electoral registration and the elections process, which then means that they've got that very good understanding of what their responsibilities are. So very blended, very much a mix and match, really being led by what members are shouting for at the time.
Thank you.
Peter, I talked a little bit about this already, but I understand that the association also offers a professional qualifications in electoral administration. Could you tell us a bit about the qualification, including the structure of the course?
Yeah, certainly. I mentioned the foundation course to start off with. That is a precursor to our certificate programme. We have a certificate and a diploma. They are independent of the association itself, because we need to keep that independence for the veracity of the qualification itself. I happen to be the chairman of the qualifications board as well, so I work independently in that way. The way the certificate works is effectively in England and Wales, it's basically candidates are expected to do four written assignments throughout the year, and then sit two examination papers, one on electoral registration matters and one on elections matters. Same basic principle in Scotland, but the issue there is that because of the different nature of elections delivery, they will deliver their examinations either on electoral registration or elections, depending on which background they come from, and then on general Scottish public administration matters. So once they've been through that process, they're qualified, they then have the letters after the name, they may then move on to the diploma process, which is more of a management level type course, which is designed just to make sure that the individuals are able to deliver as managers in their areas on that side. So to be fully qualified probably will take a fast track 2 years, 3 years, generally speaking, 4 or 5 years to get through that part of the process. But it's the only qualification that's in the UK for electoral administration. And we're looking at the moment with some stakeholder and local authorities at an apprenticeship standard for electoral administration, because they're very much very conscious of the fact there is a surfeit, there's a lack of people coming through into the profession, because as we mentioned earlier, a niche profession, it's not something that people would necessarily look towards. But the apprenticeship standard is going through that process now, and that will fit into the qualification structure as well, so long as that gets agreed by the independent body that runs apprenticeship standards in the UK.
And how is the qualification viewed within the electoral administration field in the UK, would you say?
Every single job advert now requires you to have the certificate or to be prepared to study for the certificate. We've had just over 900 administrators since it was brought into, if I get this right, it's about 15 years old now, that qualification. And there's about 900 been awarded that certificate. We've got a cohort going this year, around about 50 new people coming in onto that. So it's about 50 each year go through for the diploma. Around about just under 100 people have been awarded the diploma over that time. But to get, give you an example, again, personal example, one of the reasons I got appointed to a post many years ago was because it was between very tight between me and the other individual candidate. But because I held the AA diploma, I was actually offered the position rather than the other individual. So it just gives an example of the importance of that now within the setup.
Peter, I'd like to round off our interview with a more reflective and to some extent personal question. Namely, what is the most important lesson you've learned over your career?
Good question, Eric. I think the answer I'll give will be never take anything for granted. Treat every single electoral event with respect. It doesn't matter whether it's the smallest by-election or a UK parliamentary or an EU referendum, regardless of what it is. You're only as good as the last election that you run, because you'll be judged on what you run. And even within every single election, you must treat every single aspect of that correctly, because things can come back and bite you a little bit later on down the line. So it's as simple as that. Just don't take anything for granted. Double check, treble check all the way through. And in that way, you've got a fair chance of coming out the other side without challenge and having delivered the election that you want to do, to the qualities that you expected, that the electors themselves expected. So that's it. Don't take anything for granted.
Peter, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on. It's been a whirlwind sort of tour of the election administration of UK elections and the incredible work that the association are doing, and the importance of their role within the field now, as reflected in the qualification. So it's been wonderful to hear from you. Thank you very much for your time. So that is it for today. For any suggestions or recommendations, feel free to email us at elections@idea.int. My name is David Tauris.
My name is Erik Asplund. And thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Democracy Ideas podcast. Keep following International Idea on social media. We need all of you to participate in constructing better societies. Goodbye.